This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You bitch! No idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies and fly that shit on me, honey.
John Callio, will you go around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke right now.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are ushering in the new year by saluting the last and counting down our top queer films of 2017. And we're also, and I think a really fitting way, going to be nodding our heads to the Golden Globes today and taking a look at some of the winners. And to help us do that, we're going to be joined later in the program by the Star Observer's Matthew Wade, who will be no stranger to a lot of Joy listeners, and Paul Tonta, the head of theatrical acquisitions at Mad Men Entertainment. So, Gina and Conrad, it's going to be a big program.
Pumped.
Absolutely pumped. I think I'm more pumped about the Globes because I really struggled on my list of films for last year.
You did
putting
struggle,
it out there already.
You did, but on reflection, I actually think it was a really strong year for cinema and particularly for queer cinema. So I was a bit surprised that you struggled.
You know what it was? And Conrad and I were talking about this earlier. I really struggled to find really strong lesbian-centric films last year. Yes, there were some, but I probably wasn't a fan. I probably wasn't the audience for those films. So, and that's the thing. When I was coming with this list, I really wanted to have a really good lesbian representation. And that's where I fell down going, there are some films that I just can't put up there. I just can't do it. I found there were more gay and trans storylines that I found stronger than some that, you know, I really, anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing some films that are coming out this year, but they're not on that list.
I think that's really worthwhile point though that you made, that you couldn't find that film.
No.
So I think that's really important because they need to step it up.
I think they do.
But while last year was notable for some of the queer films that were coming out of Hollywood and from around the world, it was also really notable because there were a number of controversies to kind of rock and shake Hollywood, and they were present very much so at today's Golden Globes.
Well, that's the thing that I liked that. So there was a protest that was kind of happening this year. The protest was everyone wore black, and a lot of the stars brought activists along with them because they were looking at not only the representation of women, but all the sexual harassment stuff that we've seen. So that's what the Globes does. It kind of highlights.
It's always very political. If you think about Meryl Streep's speech last year,
amazing.
But if you're looking for an activist at the Golden Globes this year, you didn't need to go any further than Oprah Winfrey. Whose speech when she won the Cecil B. DeMille Award for kind of achievement in cinema was really remarkable.
So I want all the girls watching here now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say me too again. Thank you.
Now, we're going to talk more about the Golden Globes later in the show, but what a speech.
Standing O for a reason, right?
Yeah, so I was following the Globes on Twitter today, and what I loved most was the thread of how Oprah was actually distracting everyone.
In front
that,
row.
Exactly, yeah. That was getting up to accept an award, and because they placed her in the front row, so everyone was complaining, going, why did you put Oprah in the front row? Because everyone was kind of like, oh my God, it's Oprah. So all these stars winning were getting totally thrown. Loved it. Loved it.
Now we are going to take a look at some of the winners from the ceremony later in the program, but one winner that I have to bring up straight away because I love it so much is The Greatest Showman. Now, I know The Greatest Showman has received some tepid reviews and a lot of people have lambasted it for being too kind of wholesome, for perhaps whitewashing a number of issues that it seeks to represent, but this is kind of popcorn entertainment as far as I'm concerned, and I saw it twice in one week. It was nominated for 3 awards and it won just one. It won for This Is Me, one of the,
original
songs that was written by the writers of, the music in, La La Land and also the Tony winning Dear
Evan Hansen.
Exactly. Mm. So I thought what a kicking way to kind of kick off. What a fitting way rather to kick off our look at the year in film, 2017 in film by revisiting this really wonderful soundtrack.
Stranger to the dark, hide away, they say, 'cause we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are the
That was Keela Settle with This Is Me from The Greatest Showman, now a Golden Globe award-winning song. And I have to say, when I saw this movie, I wanted to stand up and applaud after every number. What a film. So entertaining. It is spectacular, even if it does whitewash the story that it's telling. But what a fitting way to kind of kick off our...
Just push that just under the carpet.
Hashtag what?
Maybe just stop mentioning
yeah.
that bit.
Yeah.
Well, no, because it's a fair... It's a fair criticism.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
It is a fair criticism, but I think there's a lot to love in this film, and that, I think, is a queer anthem, and if it's not, I think it will be. What a song.
If Lady Gaga sang it, maybe.
Well actually, what's her name? The blonde singer...
Kesha.
Thank you. She's released a recording of this. I gave you blonde singer and you got her.
I would have gone Kylie.
But she's released a version of it already, so...
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. This has got her written all over it.
Yeah.
Taking us back on track to what we're doing tonight, we'd actually love to hear from yourselves what your favourite film of 2017 was, and we'd love especially to hear what your favourite queer film of 2017 was. We'd love you to message in on 0427JOY949 or email us on air@joy.org.au.
Now we are counting down our top queer picks. We're counting down our top queer picks of 2017. Later in the program, when we're joined by Paul Tonta and Matthew Wade from Star Observer, we will broaden our scope of inquiry to films that perhaps aren't so queer. But for now, our top five queer films. So, Conrad, why don't you kick us off? What's coming in at number five?
Okay, I'm mixing it up, actually, because I've just, now that I've thought about it, I'm going to change it around. So my number five would be God's Own Country.
Nice.
A little British film. That came out. I think it's on your list as well.
It is definitely on my list. A little bit higher.
Yeah, a little bit higher. I loved everything about it. I thought the comparisons to Brokeback Mountain were really lazy. I thought as just from a story and a unique perspective of that kind of film, I hadn't seen it before. It was really beautiful.
Mm, absolutely gorgeous.
In my country, spring is the most beautiful.
Just so you're clear, he's here to work. It's all on your shoulders now.
What do you want?
I want it to be different. The way I want to do it.
That is Francis Lee's God's Own Country, your number five pick, Conrad. And listeners who want to learn more about the film can visit our podcast page and take a listen to our chat with Francis.
Beautiful film. My number five, okay, so we covered this on Our Takes as well. It's Battle of the Sexes, which is the dramatisation of the events that led up to that famous 1973 tennis match between Billie Jean King and Robert Riggs. I was a bit critical of the film, but what I loved about it was finally... It brought a good, strong lesbian storyline to a mainstream audience. That's the one thing it didn't whitewash, Daniel. So I was really impressed with that. And talking about activists, today Emma Stone actually took Billie Jean King with her to the red carpet to the Golden Globes.
Very cool.
Because she was Emma Stone was nominated as Best Supporting Actress.
Well, my number five pick is I Am Michael, which is the film from Justin Kelly, who brought us King Cobra as well. Last year. It stars James Franco, Zachary Quinto, Emma Roberts and Charlie Carver. Franco plays Michael Glatz, a gay activist who renounces homosexuality and becomes a Christian pastor. And what I loved about this film is that this is a, for me, it was a new kind of story. I haven't seen this kind of story on the screen. It screened at the opening night of MQFF.
So divisive. That
Very
film.
Divisive because people wanted a fun film, and this is not a fun film. This is hard work. Mm. But what I loved about it was that I thought this is a reverse coming out story. It really kind of turns the coming out genre on its head. And that was what I loved about it.
I, Michael Glatz, no longer identify as gay.
You've written what some would call very hateful things.
Michael, you're confused.
The truth is that I was living a lie.
Are you still attracted to men?
It's in the past.
What happened to the misinterpretation of the Bible? It's a book, Mike!
you can never stop fearing yourself.
That's God speaking through you.
I follow my own path.
You're being controlled by the devil himself.
The thing that will really kill you is repressing who you truly are. That's what you should really be afraid of.
I am Michael. Powerful filmmaking.
Divisive.
Yes.
My number four, I don't think, is divisive at all. And it's not technically queer, but everything about it just screamed queer to me. Wonder Woman.
Yay.
We talked about it a lot on Outtakes in the last year. We spoke about it in all different ways.
Patty Jenkins.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Celebration of an iconic character flipped on its head, delivered in a really cool way, brought us a new superstar in Gal Gadot, and just an amazing film.
When war ravaged the earth, the gods created us. I will fight for those who cannot fight for themselves.
Standing home.
I can't wait for the sequel.
I watched it again over the Christmas holidays. So it was, it stands up.
Rather bad turning Justice League.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Yes. But on its own.
But on standalone films.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
My number four is an actual documentary, Southwest of Salem, the story of the San Antonio Four, which I got to see at MQFF last year. It's basically a documentary that follows a struggle for exoneration of four Latina lesbians who were wrongfully convicted of gang rape against two young girls. Now, the film kind of captures these women still in prison fighting for their freedom, and the director captures an actual on-camera recantation by one of the initial victims 25 years on. So it's an amazing documentary. Highly recommend if you can get your hands on it, do watch this film. One critic correctly described it as it's difficult viewing for all the right reasons.
Well, my number four pick, a little bit lighter than your number four, Gina, is Beauty and the Beast from Bill Condon, the live-action reimagining of Disney's 1991 animated classic. So,
yeah, there's great parallels.
I thought the film was every bit worth its hype. I loved Ian McKellen in this. I loved Dan Stevens as Beast. I think the ensemble cast that the film featured, Luke Evans, Kevin Kline, Josh Gad, Ewan McGregor, Stanley Tucci. I mean, when you've got those names in the line, you know you're in for a treat. And this was a lavish film. It was a queer film. And if you're not convinced it was queer, listen to our podcast where we spent an hour queering up this. Well, it's the highest grossing film of 2017. So $1.2 billion worldwide. So it is it was a critical and a commercial success. Audra McDonald there with the very well-known finale to Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. My number three was a documentary that came out, I think it came out around MIFF time, I Am Not Your Negro. Ah.
I'm so glad that you picked this film.
As am I.
Yeah.
narrated by Samuel L. Jackson. It was a look at, I guess, a kind of a what if at an uncomplete work by James Baldwin, and it was interspersed with lots of different footage from his lifetime. And as a speaker and as someone who was so out and kind of, I guess, always at war with the world, it really captured the essence, I think, of who he was and his beautiful art.
And it was the first kind of feature-length film to actually do so.
Which was kind of well overdue.
There are days when you wonder what your role is in this country and what your future is in it. I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. The question you've got to ask yourself, the white population of this country's got to ask itself, is why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Well, I'm not a nigger. I'm a man.
Powerful, powerful stuff.
Mm.
And I love James Baldwin. Love him.
My number three, we talked about a moment ago, God's Own Country. So I moved it up a little higher. It is a luscious, beautiful film. And I think you're correct to say that its comparison to Brokeback Mountain is a bit easy for people to make. And look, if that encourages an audience to go and see an independent film, great, do it, because it is such a glorious film. And again, I watched it and I watched another film we'll be looking at later, and I thought, why can't I have a lesbian film just like this?
Yeah, that would be nice.
We like animals.
And there's great sweaters all through it too, remember?
I know,
the sweaters.
I know.
Oh, so much to love.
Just beautiful pastoral romance. Was that the name of the
pastoral romance?
Pastoral romance.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Well, I had coming in at number three, Moonlight, which of course I think we all remember.
That's a cheat.
It's not. We're looking at films that were released in Australia last year, okay? Right. And Barry Jenkins' wonderful version of Terrell Alvin McCraney's play in Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue, was nothing if not kind of shattering in a way. It presented the life of the main character in kind of three stages: his youth, his adolescence, and his early adult life. And it explored the difficulties that he faces with his sexuality and identity, including physical and emotional abuse. So this was heavy viewing, you know, it holds a 98% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. The site's critical consensus reads, Moonlight uses one man's story to offer a remarkable and brilliantly crafted look at the lives too rarely seen in cinema. And I think that's absolutely right. I think this was a film about representation, and it represented really well.
I'm wondering about the 2% for
the
2% rating.
I know.
98% is pretty high.
Yeah. There's always that stat thing they've got to work out, that percentage.
Also, fun fact, in a parallel universe, Barry Jenkins is my best friend.
I love that interview. I still go back and listen to that interview.
Actually, in an interesting tie to your number three pick, he's now directing an adaptation of one of James Baldwin's texts.
Yeah, I saw
that. Beale Street Could Talk.
And he's also got some new program in development. He's one of those people I'm just so excited to see what comes next, being that he is my best friend.
Now, Conrad, you didn't have a number two pick, did you?
I had a number one and number two tie, but Moonlight is on the list. I'll save my number one for the end.
Well, my number two, again, we're crossing over here, Conrad, was Wonder Woman, the well-anticipated film from Patty Jenkins. I am desperate to see the sequel. I cannot wait. She delivered so well. There was so much kind of hype around how good it would be. Well done, Patty. It was an absolute amazing film.
Well, my number two pick, I don't think this is going to surprise anyone, was The Greatest Showman. It's an American historical period drama musical film directed by Michael Gracey, first-time director, and I think this is a remarkable feat for a first-time director. It stars Hugh Jackman, Zac Efron, Michelle Williams, Rebecca Ferguson, and Zendaya, and it's inspired by the story of P.T. Barnum's creation of Barnum and Bailey Circus. Now, it has received some tepid reviews for being faux inspiring and shallow. That's a quote. But I think that this is a lot of fun, and it reminds you why you want to go to cinema. We go to cinema, yes, to see some really thought-provoking things, like films like Moonlight and so many of the films that we've talked about tonight, but this is spectacular entertainment, and I would call it the most spectacular queer film of 2017.
Ooh.
This is the greatest show.
Just one of the many great tracks from this film. And Conrad, was that a head bop that I saw? Were you starting
I love Zach.
He was actually really good.
I'd go and see
him
in pretty much anything except for Baywatch.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, we won't mention that here.
Yeah. So my number one was an actual tie. So you've already mentioned Moonlight. We've spoken about it at length. Barry Jenkins is my best friend, so you know I'm biased. The interview we did with him is still in my top five moments of my life. He was just so wonderful. And the film itself is just, it told a story that is you just don't see, and it did it so well, and it was beautiful, and yeah. everyone should see it.
And it was now, yes. you know, it was a very modern film.
And kind of in line with that, my tied number one was Call Me By Your Name. And one of the things I was thinking about was, you know, I love these movies for lots of different reasons, but the one thing I don't like people constantly referring to them is coming-of-age movies. Mm, yeah. So I just think that's really lazy. Mm. Again, it's just a way of kind of packaging it up. But both of them told a really beautiful story about young men falling in love, trying to figure out what all that means, not necessarily being gay as well. Mm. They just were in love, or in something was happening with them. And I found that to be a lot more powerful than the usual kind of we're gay people getting together and having a gay relationship or whatever.
I'm going to steal your thunder a little bit here, and yours too, Gina, but really interestingly, all three of us listed Call Me By Your Name as our number one picks. So I think there's no doubt that this was a really moving and melancholy and bittersweet, but so kind of powerful, such a powerful film. And yeah, I agree. You know, I noted that people I went to see the film with on each time I saw it really wanted to categorize Elio and Oliver, the two leads, as gay.
Mm.
And I don't think that's fair. Mm. I don't think that's what this film is about.
It's a part of it. But there's more to it. Mm. There's all these other, you know, layers, I guess, for a choice of a better word.
Like Moonlight, I actually think it's a really modern film in the way that it deals with queer sexuality, identity, and experience.
And I think when you look at, and I was talking with someone on the Book of Faces the other day, because I'm loving watching, now that it's got a broader release, I'm loving seeing people go to see this film that would never have gone to MIFF or any of the festivals, who have seen it and falling in love, running out and buying the book.
Yep.
And I was talking with a friend, and he didn't expect it when he saw the trailer. And I said, I think it's actually a very, you know, straight trailer. I think it is trying to grab the broadest audience, which is great, wonderful. We want people to see this beautiful, luscious film. You know, every time now I go into the supermarket to buy a peach, I kind of smile. I love every moment of that film, and I can't wait to see it again.
Is there anything you don't know?
I know nothing, Oliver.
Well, you seem to know more than anybody else around here.
Well, if you only knew how little I know about the things that matter.
What things that matter?
You know what things.
Why are you telling me this?
Because I thought you should know.
Because you thought I should know?
Because I wanted you to know.
That was a clip from Call Me By Your Name, Luca Guadagnino's new film based on the novel by Andre Esserman, starring Timothy Chalamet and Armie Hammer, with a really remarkable supporting cast as well. And we did dedicate a whole program late last year to Call Me By Your Name. Interviews with Andre Esserman and Luca Guadagnino were both featured in that program. So if you want to find out more about this film, which all three of us have loved and listed as our number one pick of 2017, head to the Outtakes podcast page on Joy's website.
They must. It is your homework.
Critical listening.
Yes.
Now, we are celebrating 2017, the year that was in film. And, you know, I think it was a really powerful film. We've looked at a year. We've looked at some of the queer highlights of the year. But coming up after this, we're going to be speaking with Matthew Wade from Star Observer and Mad Men's Paul Tonta about their favorite films of the year. And we'll be unpacking the Golden Globes and some of the winners at today's Golden Globe ceremony. So stick around. More on Outtakes coming up right after this.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. And if you can hear lots of papers rustling, it's because we're a full studio at the moment and all of us have our favourite picks of the year on hand.
We do our research.
We do our research. Now, we're joined in the studio at the moment by Mad Men's Paul Tonta and Matthew Wade from the Star Observer. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Now, what did you think about top five picks?
There were some I agree with. I'm a Disney tragic, so I did like the Beauty and the Beast shout out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I did appreciate that.
The exclusive gay moment. Did you talk about that? I love how the most famous, well, not the most, but one of the most famous things about Beauty and the Beast
in the mainstream media was the exclusive gay moment. It's like, has anybody seen the original animated film? It is 100% queer.
Yeah.
Thank you. Although, actually, you're a big fan of it. You know, the thing that let's just geek out on the original animation. The one thing that was disappointed about, it doesn't have the "every last inch of me is covered in hairline." No, you're blanking me out.
Oh, no.
There's a line of Gaston.
You're talking about Gaston.
Gaston, yeah. And he has this amazing line in the
and
original.
And he rips open his shirt when he does it.
Oh, right.
Do you know what my theory
was? It's not in the new version.
Do you know my theory was that Luke Evans wasn't buff enough for them to actually have that sequence, so they had to keep the top on.
But I love the fact, you know, as you talked about, it is the most successful film commercially of the year.
Yeah.
And it had this so much hoo-ha about, you know, it was such a, but you know, let's, great. Hey, it's a queer film that was the most successful film.
But I mean, cause let's be honest, that like exclusively gay moment was one of the least gay moments in the film.
Yeah,
absolutely. Correct. Yeah. But I love the fact that, you know, that's the most commercially successful film of the year. The Academy Award for Best Film was a very, very queer film.
Mm.
You know, so the two pinnacles of art and commerce are queer. It's brilliant.
That's great, yeah.
2017, outstanding, yeah.
And it looks like we might have a similar moment this year.
Mm-hmm.
Although if today's Golden Globes are anything to go by, perhaps that won't happen. Were either of you surprised by the outcomes at today's award ceremony?
I mean, well, I've seen the three Billboards film, and I just thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. But I guess, I mean, you guys can obviously enlighten me a little bit. Was the favorite to win those kind of, was it Call Me By Your Name? I mean, was that what everyone was assuming would probably take it, or not really?
I don't think so.
Okay. Was it a toss-up between that and maybe The Shape of Water?
I think it was an even field. I think Shape of Water, possibly.
Mm.
But, you know, the Golden Globes are generally, they like their big star films. Mm. Like, they like their actors and their big, you know. So, I'm surprised that Dunkirk didn't win anything. I thought that might have won director.
Now, what did you think about Dunkirk, though?
I think it's an exceptional piece of filmmaking.
Did you really?
Yeah, I really do. I'm not a huge fan, generally, of Christopher Nolan. Early stuff, you know, I love Memento, but then it just becomes bloated and, you know, long and ham-zimmery. But I thought Dunkirk was actually an exceptionally well-crafted, you know, quite, you know, condensed piece of work.
Because I'm sorry, but I suffered through that. I did not. I
think we have to give Paul an award for creating a new verb about filmmaking, Hans Zimmery.
Yeah. Look at his music, you know, that music that Hans Zimmer, I think it was it Interstellar or what's the one with, what's the spinning top one with Leonardo, that Inception.
Inception.
Remember that?
Yes.
Music.
Right. Hans Zimmery. Totally.
So we should specify for listeners who perhaps aren't so familiar with the Golden Globes that they do things a little bit differently. Not only do they cover film and TV, but they like to split their films into categories that aren't often accurate, like drama on the one hand and comedy musical on the other.
Which Get Out was slated into, is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
They're always pretty loose with their categories. So you were referring to three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri before, which picked up a number of awards, including Best Motion Picture Drama. And I know that you were raving about it when you saw it.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I think actually because I went in with a particular set of ideas of what it was going to be like, and it actually was different than what I anticipated. I expected that it was going to be kind of a dark comedy, and I knew the general plot, but actually it was darker than I anticipated, and actually was funny than I anticipated too. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. But did you bring that up specifically because I guess, yeah, it almost kind of could fit into the comedy category as well? Is that?
Well, just because I guess it's the winner.
Yeah.
So it would be remiss not to talk about. I mean, Call Me By Your Name was, I think, our favorite.
Yeah.
But there are some really notable other works. Clearly you're a fan, Paul, of Dunkirk. But did it deserve to win?
I loved Call Me By Your Name. Like, I think I would have loved for that to win an award. I would have loved Get Out. Those two are my top two picks of the year. So, yeah, I was rooting for Call Me By Your Name. But, yeah, Three Billboards, I think, is deserving of an accolade because I think it's a well-made movie and it's great. But, yeah, I think Call Me By Your Name would have deserved it more.
What are your thoughts?
I think it should have won. I think it's an exceptional piece of work. The biggest, that's a disappointment. The bigger disappointment was Best Actor. Because I think Timothée Chalamet's performance is, it's just breathtaking. Like, I mean, I've seen the film a number of times now, and his performance is staggering. It really is quite staggering. And, you know, they gave it to Gary Oldman is an exceptionally good actor, you know, and doing, putting on the makeup for 5 hours a day, playing Churchill. I'm sure it's wonderful, but I don't want to see it. I have zero interest in seeing it. But I think it's also the young blood, like, you know, it's giving the award to the... It's a Lifetime Achievement Award. He's fantastic. Great. But I really hope that the Oscars go with Timothée Chalamet because that is... It's just a beautifully crafted performance.
As much as I loved Call Me By Your Name, and I think as the film progressed, Timothée Chalamet's performance progressed, but there were some scenes in the beginning of the film, especially watching it a second time, where I was in two minds about the performance and not entirely sold. But that last sequence, which I think was very brave filmmaking by Guadagnino, but I thought that Chalamet, I mean, that last sequence itself is Oscar-worthy. Mm.
What changed that second time, like specifically? Like, what? How did you see it differently? And what, like, with more respect, I should say.
The film?
No, the acting.
The performance.
Yeah.
Well, I just didn't pick up on it, I guess, the first time I saw it. And the second time, you know the story. You've got time to kind of take in these other elements.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because the first time I saw the film, I thought it was too long. The second time I saw the film, I thought those last few sequences were the most important in the film. Mm. So it was a different experience.
What do we think? So James Franco.
Yeah.
Now, he did pick up an award. He did, you know, on stage today, if anyone's seen the clip, he did bring up the original Disaster.
Tommy Wiseau,
Indeed, and push him away from the mic.
I did see that.
So he gave us I Am Michael and King Cobra last year, and now he's come with a Disaster Artist. I'm deliberately have not gone to watch this film because I deliberately do not want to be subjected to The Room again.
Oh, that is an awful film.
Awful.
So like, why, not just bad, it's a misogynist film.
Yeah, wait, is in The Room or?
The Room.
But it's one of the longest running films, is it not, of like commercially screening films of all time?
Yeah, I think
probably.
You're right.
Yeah. For the right reason.
Not for the right
reason. And that's what annoys me, but. Mm. Yeah.
So we should probably give our listeners a broader overview of what the film actually is about.
Does one. Basically, it's giving light to a film that should never have been given light again in The Room.
So,
which everyone's now, you know, hey, Ma, you know, everyone's quoting this film. So this is what James Franco's gone and made, basically, re-depicting the story of the Disaster Artist is the story of The Room.
The making of the film.
Terrible.
Yes.
No. Just, can we put it behind us and not, yeah. I don't know. How do we feel? Am I just being a bit harsh?
No, I agree with you. I haven't seen it because for the same reasons. Yeah, no, I really think The Room is just, you know, all that. Yes, it's terrible and quotable and all that, but it's deeply misogynistic film. It's a really awful. And I don't like the fact. I think I wish this film would just disappear. Mm. It won't, clearly. Mm. I agree with you.
Well, it's almost a bit incongruous then that James Franco should win for his performance in that film at this year's ceremony, which was very political in entirely the opposite way.
Yes. Absolutely. It is. I agree with you. It is interesting. Yes, politically.
Can we go the other way? Can I ask about, have either of you seen I, Tonya?
I haven't watched it yet. Oh, you haven't either?
No.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of buzzing about that.
Yes. Yeah.
Just the trailer gets me excited.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when Elson Janney drops the C-bomb right in the first 10 seconds of it.
Oh, I got obsessed with Elson Janney.
Yeah. Yes. The haircut. Yeah. Give her an award for the haircut.
They have.
And Lady Bird.
Yes.
Yeah.
See.
And Lady Bird.
I have seen it.
Yes, I saw that too.
You have?
Yeah. I haven't seen Lady Bird yet.
I loved it.
Me too.
I absolutely loved it. It's the bee's knees,
that film. Someone said to me, oh, I don't really want to see that movie because I think it looks like kind of, you know, it's just another kind of coming of age story. And I was like, it's so much
more. You're having a dig at the coming of age tonight.
Well, you know, it's just a boring way of saying it's a movie about a young person.
Yeah.
Can I ask, Lady Bird, I've literally seen universal acclaim. Like, I don't think I've seen anyone say a negative thing about it. Does it live up to the hype?
Yes,
absolutely. Okay.
I think so. Because it tells that story in a way that you don't expect.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really interesting subplot all the way through it about what it means to be not the kind of perfect American family, and especially economically.
Mm.
You just don't see that story told.
The father role is very interesting in that regard.
Yeah.
Like where the power dynamics are in a family, and you know the man is supposed to be, you know, the breadwinner, but he's not. It's interesting, the shift. And the mother, like Laurie Metcalf, is magnificent.
Oh, so good.
But the other interesting thing about the film is it's got a queer character in there, and we won't give it away what it is, but it's a very interesting role.
Yeah.
And also Timothy Chalamet, who's the lead in Call Me By Your Name, is in Lady Bird.
I didn't know that, okay.
Yeah, and this plays a very different role, and he's fantastic.
He's a great net, and he's such a dick in Lady Bird, which is awesome. But I was saying to Daniel when I first got here today, I didn't realise all the crossovers that were happening. Mm. So Michael Stuhlbarg from Call Me By Your Name is in The Post, and The Shape of Water. And it wasn't until I saw the trailer for Shape of Water, I went, oh, and I started to like, piece it all together. And then, like, where is he? Why is he not nominated for everything?
Mm. Yes. I do feel like Call Me By Your Name, in particular, has been snubbed.
Yes.
I think Luca Guadagnino is a notable absentee from the list of best directors. But I think Natalie Portman was also really on point today.
I love that.
No, go for it.
Just basically when she was announcing the nominees, she just had to include the fact that they were all men, which I thought was amazing. Mm.
Because if you look at some of the films this year, there were notable female directors behind a lot of the most successful films, like Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig, Patty Jenkins behind Wonder Woman.
Even Mudbound was directed by a woman as well. Yeah.
Right. So where were they? Why? I mean, and I guess this is what we see time and time again, the politics around the process of nominations, which the Academy is starting to address.
I think Greta Gerwig will be Oscar nominated. I think Luca Guadagnino will be nominated for the Oscars. I think they're going to be much more diverse, shall we say, with their nominations. I really hope so. I hope so too. Mm. But it's deserving. I mean, those two are the best directed films of the year.
So let me then ask you, Golden Globes to one side, our queer picks to one side, what was your best film of 2017?
It's interesting, my Moonlight. Actually, I don't know when I'm pausing.
It's so dramatic.
Yeah, building suspense.
No, I think Moonlight is... the reason I paused is because I actually saw it in 2006 and then I rewatched it because it was released commercially here in January. But it's flat out one of the best films I've ever seen. And watching it a second time, because the first time I saw it, I was just gobsmacked by it. I think that last section is singly... Like, I don't think I breathed. Like, you know, that whole sequence in the diner.
Yeah.
I felt like I didn't breathe.
Yeah.
That's just a groundbreaking film on every level. I mean, it's so queer. It's so black. Like, you don't see these films.
No.
At all, in his direction, it's just superb. I mean, he's made two films. And
it's incredible.
I think we're starting to see a shift, though, more broadly. It is kind of new filmmakers that are bringing us some of the greatest films.
Mm. Yes. The freshest films and the ones that you just... I mean, Luca Guadagnino, I think it's his fifth film, if maybe his fourth. But, you know, again, that has a freshness to it. I mean, I love 2017 for so many reasons that you've got that at the end of the film, the end of the year, and Moonlight at the start. Mm. There's two, like, you know, they're massive films.
They are massive.
And in the middle, and they're both gay films. But another film that I passionately loved, and it's not released commercially, and I think it's in March in Australia, but it's called A Fantastic Woman.
Yeah.
It's a Chilean film, trans lead character. That is just, like, magnificent. It was at MIFF this year, last year. It's magnificent. Like, that is one of the best. And it's shortlisted for the Oscars. There's 9 shortlisted foreign language films. Fingers crossed. It's a nomination.
I think it's getting a broader theatrical release in February.
February. So next month. So look out for that. And the other one in the Oscars for the queer, and it's getting released, I think, next month or 2 months, is The Wound. It's a South African film. Queer, like, very queer film. Mm. So, you know, the foreign language, you know, from Africa, from Chile, it's, you know, trans, it's diverse and with some great queer cinema from around the world.
Yeah, I loved The Wound. The Wound was amazing, yeah. Mm.
But there were a number of kind of, I guess, really gritty queer films from all corners of the globe. Beach Rats.
Yes, Beach Rats is amazing.
Yeah. God's Own Country, which didn't make my top five but made both of yours.
Yeah. It's outstanding. BPM. See, BPM actually in my list is sort of my number two. Madman, like, coming out work for, we're releasing that.
When are you?
Well, I'll just say that you'll be able to see it in March at some film festivals in Melbourne.
Okay.
But anyway, you'll get a chance to see it in March, everyone.
Okay.
And that's an outstanding film. Like, that's just, you know, passionate, full of life. You know, even, you know, it's about the ACT UP in France.
Sure.
But, you know, it's just an exceptional piece of work. I'm glad you also mentioned I'm Not Your Negro earlier as well, because that more than anything, it's just made James Baldwin people recognise who that magnificent man and his writings. And
his writing is
just lifted remarkable. And linking it in that, you know, Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight, he's in post-production on his new film.
If Beale Street is Beale Street could talk.
So that's like yay.
Which was, I guess, one of his more contained novels.
Yes,
because a lot of his other novels are quite sprawling.
Yep.
So it will be interesting to see because I think when we spoke to the producer of I'm Not Your Negro, he said that this was the first time the James Baldwin estate had actually opened up the estate to a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So clearly they're starting to do that a bit more often, which is really exciting.
It is, and that's Hubert Pecht, is it, the producer? Because
that's right.
And I was speaking with him because he was at the Sydney Film Festival, and it was extraordinary how much they had to go through. It was about 10 years of convincing the estate to allow them to open the estate to make the film.
Mm.
And he hinted back, because this was in June last year, he hinted that there's going to be a big film coming out with a named director. I was like, he couldn't tell me, even though I was like, I won't tell anybody. But I think it's the first of many. Not many, but first of a number that we're going to see.
I'm waiting for Another Country.
Yes.
Although that's more of a mini-series.
Giovanni's Room, I think, will be fascinating.
Yes.
Because that's great.
Politically, it's, you know, especially with the female characters and that, with the queer bit, that's outstanding, that work. But, yeah.
What about for you, Matt? What
our top pick of the year?
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, like my number two was Call Me By Your Name and the third one was Moonlight. But my number one actually wasn't a queer film. It was Get Out. I love horror films and I know it wasn't in the traditional sense a horror movie, but I also liked how it just was a completely fresh movie. It was political. It had all this important social commentary in it. And I loved it. I actually thought it was brilliant. I really, really liked it. That was my number one movie. I know it's not queer, but yeah.
Well,
it was one of my highly recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
It was a great movie.
Well, look, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. I guess as a way of wrapping up, what's the number one pick that perhaps we haven't talked about that you're looking forward to this year?
Well, I haven't seen Lady Bird yet, and I think that's at the top of my list. I'm really, looking forward to that one.
I don't actually. It's funny. What's the one I want to look forward to
what's
the most? Yeah. I know, it's true. What is left? I wanted to give a quick little shout out to an Australian film I saw recently. It's a short film. This is going to be silly because it's a short film, but it's Aussie and it's amazing.
Oh, you've got a short filmmaker sitting right next to you.
It's called Mrs. McCutcheon. This and it won an award last year at MIFF. I don't know who that is. I'm afraid.
Remember you speak into the microphone.
I'm not sure, who the filmmaker is, but it won an award to me, but let's hope. It's just a magnificent film. Like, it's just this little 10, 15-minute contained film.
See, I've got a few features that I'm hoping to see this year that I've seen the shorts. And so the shorts of the filmmakers in the last few years, and that's what I'm really looking forward to.
Like, which ones? What's sort of yours?
So I think Signature Movie is definitely one of them, and they've made a lot of web series and done a lot of independent stuff in the States, and they're making a comedy. And from what I've seen, it looks really funny and looks like the kind of story I want to see. Just really silly kind of lesbian fun comedy. And it's like...
some good lesbian stuff. Because lesbian stuff the last year or two has been a bit disappointing.
Yeah, look, there have been some really strong lesbian films, but maybe I'm not their audience. Maybe it is for a younger audience to sort of see those stories.
Did you see Women Who Kill, the one that was...
There was just a few things that, I want a Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah,
true, exactly.
I want something like that. I want something like God's Own.
Look, thank you so much, Matthew Wade from Star Observer, Paul Tonta, Head of Theatrical Acquisitions at Madman. Have I got that right? Paul?
Yes.
And the rest. Thank you both so much for joining us. More on Outtakes coming up right after this.
Thank you.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are on Outtakes, where we've been counting down our top queer picks of 2017.
Now, Daniel, there is something impressive on this weekend with one of my favourite filmmakers, and you're a part of it.
I'm not a
filmmaker.
Well,
one of my favourite filmmakers. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. So I'm moderating a panel at this weekend's Better Together conference, which is at Melbourne Town Hall. And the panel is called The Importance of Queer Identities on the Screen, Where To From Here, and looks at why queer representation in Australian cinema particularly is important and what we can do to foster better representation. And the panel is great. So I'll be moderating it. But on the panel, Anna Kokinos, the director of films like Head On, great Gray Mason, CEO of Screen Australia, Carolyn Pitcher, the CEO, newly appointed CEO of Film Victoria, Stuart Richards, who we've had in the studio before, author and academic, Cerise Howard, a film festival producer, and Ross Murray from GLAAD in the US. So it's a...
What day?
This Saturday.
Where?
Melbourne Town Hall.
From what time?
3:30.
Where can people get tickets?
Qualityproject.com or something like that.
We'll share the link on Outtakes, I reckon.
That's it for another week on Outtakes. Clearly a great year in film. So much more we can talk about, but we've run right out of time.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.